So my name is Hanumat Sreshrap, and it's a name for Ramachandra. And he was Hanumat means of Hanuman. Like you have Bhagavat means of Bhagavan. So Hanumat means of Hanuman. And Prayashak is somebody who sends a messenger. So Ramachandra is the sender of Hanuman with a message like that. And so I was initiated in 74 in San Francisco. I was there as a brahmachari, a lot of service. And then 1984 I took sannyas. And then I was working a lot with the Bhaktivedanta Institute, Bhakti Sri Dhamma Maharaj. And my own background too, I was in the university. I studied psychology, biology, different things. And then
I worked with the Bhaktivedanta Institute for quite some time. And also we had this program, I think we performed here too. Yeah, we performed in the other hall. We didn't have any outside shows, I don't think, with our group Rangini Ketan. Didn't anybody see them? It was the Manipuri dancing group. Yeah, yeah. And we had a lot of programs with Maharaj, Bhakti Swarup Damodara Maharaj. And then now we've, 1997, I guess it was. I was working a lot for him, and he said, you should really start doing some of your own programs, you know, and stuff, and you have good ideas and this and that. So I started doing more other programs. And now we recently incorporated a 501c3 tax-exempt nonprofit educational corporation in the state of Tennessee. And it's called NEOS, if you want to make checks out, N-I-O-S, or like that. But what it stands for is North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies. Now, of course, mostly what we study are our classics, you know, but people don't care. If you 85% your own tradition, okay, they don't really care. But other things too, because there's so many very, very wonderful, you know, books and things in the world. And if you know a little bit about them, you can actually do preaching to other people like that. So we have a lot of programs going on. And I was thinking we're going to be here until Friday morning. And so I think tonight there's this symposium on education. And then tomorrow night is a program in Mother Madhava Madhavi. Is she here? Staki? Ella? No? This maybe will be bilingual. In South America, they have this question. What do you call somebody who speaks three languages? Trilingue, right? What do you call somebody who speaks two languages? Bilingue. And what do you call somebody who speaks one language? American. Yeah. So tomorrow night maybe we'll have a program, a bilingual program or a Spanish program. And my old friend Mishra Bhagavan says, if nothing else, it's one of the best food in Dallas. You go there, if you like Mexican food. Yeah. And then we're going to be at Wednesday. We'll be at SMU, and the program we're doing there is one of the central programs we're working on now, which is Light of the Bhagavat, Cultivation of the Human Spirit. And here you see the where to go? Our banner. There's moving. This banner. Hari Leela, our devotee from Houston, probably a lot of you know him. And he's very much involved in the educational programs there. And then, so we started developing these, you know. And it became because NEOS, our organization, had this contract in South America. I go to South America a lot now, with San Marcos University. And San Marcos University is the oldest university in the Western world. Like that, several hundred years old. And even now, a very powerful university, 60,000 students, something like that. And so we have, after many, many years of preaching and doing programs, we established a relationship with them, which is kind of like having a relationship with Harvard University in the U.S. And so the program was an agreement to produce for 3 years Bharatiya Sanskriti, Festival of Classical Indian Culture. And we had different academic sections on social philosophy, political science, architecture, medicine, astrology, Danda Veda, Gandharva Veda, you know, all these things. Had a ladies' fashion show like that from India. It was very nice, actually. and enough prasad. And we also we made one movie for every festival and finished off with that like that. And the ambassador of India participated, the National Education University, the National Air Force Academy, and also the National Science Foundation, which was a real accomplishment, because they said, we've never let anybody religious, you know, talk here before. And so they were a little worried about what was happening. But I presented Sankhya and how the analysis from the spiritual level to the psychological level, on down to the physical level like that. And in Peru, of course, there's, you know, they have all this contact with ghosts and everything else, you know, all this contact with the same medical system that the Ayurveda uses. So there they're really appreciating. Here's something which is scientific, but also it explains all these things that we know how they happen. Actually, our lecture was Sankhya, Oriental Philosophy of Nature, or How Cats See Ghosts, right? And everybody down there, they know cats see ghosts. They watch them, you know. They do. They have very much more subtle tactile sense than we do. So a lot of these subtle creatures have tactile bodies, but not visual bodies. And so they can feel them like that, you know. So very, very nice programs going on down there. And the last festival, the last year, and so much work, oh, really hard. It was entitled, you know, Light of the Bhagavat, Cultivation of the Human Spirit, and this festival like that. And it's somehow or other, step by step, I was being inspired by this. I always liked the book. And of course, as I'm doing this, I was, of course, getting so much integrated with Tamal Krishna Maharaj's work, you know, in this area. Because in 1961, Prabhupada was invited to a congress on cultivation of the human spirit in Japan. And so he thought, okay, let me just take this one chapter from the Bhagavatam, you know, a description of autumn, and then describe the pictures. And it's a very pantheistic chapter, different, you know, things from the different seasons give us lessons like that. And he thought Oriental people are very fond of this kind of thing, you know, very much like nature. And so he described everything, the pictures and everything else, but Prabhupada couldn't go. And so finally it was after he left his body that Tamal Krishna Maharaj, as far as I understand, along with Giridhari and the BBT in Hong Kong, just took up the whole project. And they found a very, very nice artist, Madame Li Yang Shuang, you know. And she did all the paintings. There's one on display in the lobby there, like that. And, you know, she said it was one of the highest points in her whole career, about the highest, just so much inspiration. So then all the art was produced. And it's called Gongbi style, which is very Taoistic, very intense nature. And people are just a part of nature. You can really feel like, you know, peaceful and empowered by it. So 48 pictures. And then the book was published the first time. And you may have seen that. It was this full size, 8.5 by 11 size, like that. You know? Then the BBT did it again, but they did it as a mass distribution book, about half the size as this red book you've seen. But it's not really a mass distribution book. It's a class distribution book. And so it didn't go that fast. And so we were organizing the program in South America, and I wanted to buy like maybe 300 copies to take for this program. And they said, well, we only got about 25. It's out of print. And we're not going to print it again because it went too slow, you know. So there, for a devotee, there are no problems. For a devotee, everything is just a challenge, you know. So I was thinking, what are we going to do, you know? So I thought, okay, we'll print it again. We'll do it 8.5 by 11 size, full size, but we'll do it in Spanish and English. So there it is, Castellano y Inglés, ambos. Yeah. And it has the, you know, all the pictures like that, but full size. Yeah. And yes, for many people just love it. You know, it goes on developing like that. Then I heard that Maharaj, just before he left his body, had already made an arrangement with Cambridge University to do the symposium there. So it was very inspiring, and so we were trying things, and the mayor of Lima saw the art, and he said, oh yeah, it'd be very nice, you know, because it's a very oriental country. Peru's a very oriental country. So he gave us the, we got one municipal gallery to set the art up. Then one friend who's very much interested in the devotee, he's an architect, Walter Leon, he's an architect with a big university there. And he does art exhibitions, so he just for free did all this work. And it's a lot of work if you've ever tried to do an art exhibition. You can't just hang the paintings. The lighting has to be correct. They have to be related to each other. They went to 6 different print shops before they found a shop that would do the, you know, things the way they wanted them, like that. So then we have it all on YouTube. You know, the mayor is there, you know, inaugurating the whole event, international dignitaries. And then some of the biggest newspapers in Lima came, Peru came and asking questions. And then the school children, they made an appointment to come and have somebody take them, show them the pictures, like that. So that was going on for some time before the main event. And then we have pre-events in different areas, because Light of the Bhagavad, it talks about interfaith dialogue. It talks about the structure of the cosmos. It talks about a lot about social philosophy. For example, in Peru, there's a lot of Marxist philosophy. So there's one painting about this capitalist, and he's very depressed because there's good rains and he can't exploit the poor farmers. So Prabhupada's purport is this fantastic, you know, for a basis for dialogue. And the book is just to meet people. It's just to get, you know, make some impression, to get people to take interest in the Bhagavatam. Then after that, what we have available, we've been doing now for about 4 years, is a very systematic study on the first 2 cantos. And in Houston, last year we had about 5 groups throughout the world. And we do 1 chapter a week, so it takes 30 weeks. And last year was accredited by San Marcos University. And devotees did it in Houston, Harlila. And everybody, there's content, there's real content there, you know. And so now they're doing it again. Last year was about 15 devotees, right? 10? And this year is about 45, you know. And now actually I'm headed off to Russia. I'm trying to get the visa for Russia. It's the first time I've gone there. I've been invited for many years. Because they want to go ahead and establish the Bhakti Bhai Baba degree. How many people here have your Bhakti Shastri degrees? Raise your right hand. No? Harila. Okay. Okay, 2 or 3 of us. Yeah. Yeah, but Prabhupada wanted this. He was establishing this, you know. And it's very nice. You know, we should have if you have an academic understanding of these books, you know. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, anybody who reads this Bhagavad Gita worships me with his intelligence. With your intelligence, you can understand so many things. How to get ice cream, how to cheat people out of this and that, you know. No, but you can also let Krishna take charge of your intelligence. This is how things are. This is who you are. This is what the world is. And that takes hearing. And that's what education means, you know. So we have a very substantial program that's developing, but it's still, you know. I am also teaching in Radadesh. You know, in Radadesh, our Bhaktivedanta College. Right. It's in Belgium, and it's ISKCON's premier higher education institute. And they're working with Wales Lampeter University, and through them, they're a fully accredited university. They have a 1 year for a certificate, 2 years for a diploma, and 3 years for a bachelor's degree in theology. And you study a lot of very academic subjects like that, and it's a regular academic standard. They graduated their first students last year, about 10 students, with bachelor's degrees, and now they're applying to Oxford, you know, so many places for their master's and PhD degrees. So I'm sure Srila Prabhupada is very happy. You know, ISKCON is now awarding, you know, regular university-accepted bachelor's degrees in theology. And so that's one thing that's going on. It's a nice curriculum. And another thing is, of course, you may know about the project in Oxford. You know about that? There's a thing called the Center for Hindu and Vaishnava Studies, but they changed it to the Center for Vaishnava Studies, Center for Hindu Studies with Samika Rishi. And it's a center in Oxford which focuses on studying, you know, our culture, our philosophy, things like that. And then they applied for affiliation with Oxford University. Now, apparently the Jewish community had the same thing in about like, and I think it was maybe 10 years ago or something, even longer, they applied also to become affiliated. They sent a letter in applying for affiliation. And after 4 years, they got a response to their letter saying, "We received your letter and we are considering it." You know. Then after about like 10 years, they finally got affiliated. So Samika Rishi submitted our letter, and I think within 3 months, he got a letter back saying, "We're considering this and that." And now they're fully affiliated, which is very, you know, again, quite an accomplishment. So the center is there, And then many devotees are going there, ISKCON devotees, and they're doing their master's degrees and PhDs. And of course they live with the center, they associate with devotees, but they belong to a particular, you know, department or something at Oxford. One of those was Ravi Gupta. You know Ravi Gupta? Back to Godhead magazine. Yeah. So I initiated him as Radhika Raman. And he's an example. He's like, you know, in ISKCON we've had so many failures. You know, what's his name? Rick Warren? He's a real famous Christian preacher. He started off with 12 people at a Bible study program. And after 20 years, he now has 10,000 people coming a week to his church. Like that. Yeah. Baptist guy. His wife's father was a Baptist minister. His father was a Baptist minister. And his grandfather was a Baptist minister. She also wanted to be a Baptist minister, you know, an Acharya family. So he wrote a book about the history of his church and the things they did, And he said, you can't, you know, imitate this. I mean, you can't copy this. Everybody has their own challenge. But you can see what we did and you can take advantage. And many devotees are reading the books. There's so many things, mistakes we've made in ISKCON, that you go, yep, yep, yep. Yeah. But on this side, there are things that he said. For example, it took him, he said, 15 years to realize the value of music in a church service, right? And practically speaking, in our case, it's the only thing we have going for us is music in a church service. But other stuff is just incredible. You know, he's a professional guy. So he said, you know, that this is all of our successes, you know, this book. He said there's five more books on our failures, which I'm not going to write. Yeah. But, you know, 4 out of 5 times what we tried failed. So if it's happening to you, it's failure, 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 success. Well, if you keep on going like that, after 20 years, you'll have 10,000 people coming to your program. So don't be discouraged, it's, you know, by these different programs. But ISKCON has had a lot of failures. You know, don't get us started here. You know? Especially in education, right? In education. On the other hand, homeschooling has been something which has been, as far as I know, I never heard, practically speaking, of a bad case where it came out not successful. You know? But a lot of factors, you know, of course, maybe you know this too. Usually that some parent is a more educated person, like Radhika's mother was a journalist, you know, before she got married. And then so the two boys, Radhika and Gopal, they were little boys, and they were going to a Seventh-day Adventist school. That's kind of like the ISKCON option. If there's no Gurukula, it's Seventh-day Adventist schools. And it works out pretty well. But even that they didn't like. So from very young age, like 6 years old or something, she started doing homeschooling. And she would just take Prabhupada's books. And she'd read to them and have them read. And have them summarize what they'd read. And any words they didn't know, they'd look them up. And that was such a fantastic education, you know. They never studied geography. And there was going to be a national geography competition in Boise, Idaho. So they studied for geography for 3 weeks. And Radhika came in second place out of the entire state. Like that. And so then at some point he thought he wanted to write better. He was writing for Back to Godhead magazine. So he went to Boise State University, which is a big university, and started taking a couple English courses. And they're saying, why are you doing so well and this and that? And they're asking him, why don't you take a full-time study at the university? Why are you just taking these courses? And he said, well, I never graduated from high school. And they were amazed. And he said, well, here, take this test. You know, okay, you graduated from high school. Okay, you know, join the university. So he graduated from Boise State University, I think it was 18 years old. Yeah, he got his bachelor's degree at 18 years old in philosophy and mathematics, first place. And of course the dean had to come to the graduation party in the temple with his wife, and they're sitting there like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? You know? But after about half an hour, they started singing and dancing and you know, everything else, you know. So it's a very, very good preaching program in the university, their presence. And then he went to Oxford, and then he graduated there at 22 years old. He finished off his doctorate in philosophy from Oxford at 22 years old, like that. And he's one of the youngest, he isn't the youngest, but one of the youngest people to ever graduate with a doctorate at that age. So as a graduation present, his father paid for him to come to South America for these programs we were doing. And he was had a wonderful time. Harley also went there. It's wonderful preaching and everything, a vacation in Peru, no? Yeah. And so down there they had this British impression. The British created this idea that India is a backward, uncivilized country and nobody should go there. You know, we'll take care of it. And even amongst the Indians, they've created this impression. So that in India, if you study psychology in the university, you study Sigmund Freud rather than Patanjali with the Yoga Sutras. It's insane. You know? So he was down there, and our lecture tour, so many universities, was on this idea about, you know, how there's always been philosophy in India. Because they say philosophy started with the Greeks. Before that, it was just superstition, ritual, things like that. So he said, there are so many philosophers in India. Patanjali, Jaimini, Astavarga, Kanada, and all of them have fantastic people with so many, you know, thousands and millions of followers and processes and, you know. He said, out of all of these, I picked one tradition, which is Vedanta, Vyasadeva. And out of so many Vedantic traditions, Ramanuja, Madhva, I took, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. And out of all those philosophers, I chose one philosopher, Jiva Goswami. How many verses in the Mahabharata? Who knows? How many verses did Jiva Goswami write? 400,000. Yeah, 400,000 verses Jiva Goswami wrote. So anyway, he said, I took one of his works. It was the Sad Sandarbhas. You may know this. This is our real strong point in our culture. And out of these six Sandarbhas, I took one, and even that I just took a portion. The Sandarbhas are arranged in what are called anuchedas, like little essays. Like he deals with one topic, writes about it, maybe one page, two pages, then he goes to the next topic. And Radhika did his research. He went to India and he found an original manuscript which was older than anything they had, with some very interesting variations. But he took one section. So Jiva Goswami expects that you've already studied the Vedanta of Shankara. You've already studied the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. You've already studied all the Mimamsa Shastras of Jaimini. He expects you've already done all that. Right? So he's talking about what is the truth, you know, and it's like trying to understand a, you know, 500-year-old, you know, lecture summary given for Nobel laureates like that in a foreign language. Like that. He said one time he translated, I think it was five sentences, and it took him 6 hours to translate five sentences, and by the time he was finished, he had three pages of footnotes just to make it comprehensible. Or to speak of actually going in the depth of the thing like that. So he gave his presentation and he said, you know, so, and said, and that was sufficient. That was sufficient to get a PhD in philosophy from Oxford, is that one section like that. So people are very impressed. They don't know about what is our culture, what is our tradition like that, our scholarship and everything else like that. So we're doing these programs in Peru of, you know, with Lila Bhagavat on many different themes. Science, religion, social philosophy, and people are becoming attracted. They're waking up, you know, taking some interest. And we're coming to North America now and trying to also develop the same things and see how it's going. And especially our outreach tool is this, you know, Light of the Bhagavad. You have a nice art exhibition. Many places, they appreciate that. Invite people to come. You have pre-events and different topics. You know, for example, retirement. It's a very big topic now because so many people are getting old and they're, well, what do I do now? But the Bhagavatam has a very nice discussion about what to do after you retire from this Grihastha ashram. And you invite different people, have a nice symposium, and you don't try to come to so many conclusions. Rather, you try and generate some interest in the topic and some beginning, and then people take the book, right? They buy the book, right? And they read it. And then they say, what's next? Well, biography of the author. Okay, what's next? Nectar of instruction. Summary of our whole philosophy like that. What's next? Okay. You can take our course on the Srimad Bhagavatam like that. So we're developing these things. In Radha Desh, I'm teaching we'll do this. The Prabhupada recommends three books by Rupa Goswami especially. Nectar of instruction. Rupa Goswami, what books do we have? Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion. And then the Dagda Madhava and Lalita Madhava. Many times he'll talk like that, you know, like that. So on Friday, Thursday, we'll give a summary of those things like that. And it's a complete summary of our whole culture. It's really incredible. So that's what the presentation I'm giving at Radha Desh. I'm teaching there an accredited course on Rupa Goswami. And I asked Yadunandana, who's the principal of the university, how do I teach this? Who else has been teaching this? What should I do? And he said, higher education in ISKCON is in diapers. Right? He did a whole research on the thing. And it's very interesting how it's developed and tried to develop. And we shouldn't be ashamed. I mean, the Buddhists took, I don't know how many hundred years, you know, after the Buddha disappeared. And it took the help of Emperor Ashoka before they established Nalanda. And Nalanda was their big university. And from there, everything else happened. They could train up people to be teachers, do everything else like that. It's like the Mormons. What's the big Mormon university? Brigham Young. And from there they train people to do all, to spread their theology and to understand it, to teach their own members to go out. So now we have in Radha Desh something, like that. And actually it's going quite quick, if you look at historically like these programs like that. So this is ISKCON. We've gone through so many things trying to establish education. And still many people think it's kind of like, the most insignificant part of our whole culture. Everything else comes before that. Yeah. But if you look at the other side of the point, in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, Srimad Bhagavatam should be taught in the schools and universities, like that. Yeah? And books are the basis, not just to distribute them, but to read them. Yeah? Because then you get an understanding of who am I, what is this world, how do I live properly, and you can become happy, right? And you can influence other people. And if you look at the world, it's such a hellish place right now. It's unbelievable. There's not one country on earth where people are happy, as far as I know. Yeah? Not America. People aren't happy. Some of the most unhappy people in America. Yeah? And so there's a big lack of knowledge about who are we, how to live properly. And the Bhagavatam explains that. How to organize society, how men and women should have relationships, how to have relationship with the animals, how to have relationship with nature. And then you live very peacefully. And then you begin to inquire, well, is there something more than this body? My body's okay. I mean, it's nice, But is there something more? So then after that, of course, the Bhagavad philosophy describes distinction of the spirit from matter. And not just theoretically, practically speaking, you can see you become detached from, your entanglement in sexual relationships, eating, sleeping, all these things, you become detached from these. And even the greatest physical distress, you can just go on chanting. This BTG article, right, is about Russia. It's interesting, I'm trying to go there now. But if you read the things they went through, I mean, physically beaten with their teeth knocked out and everything else, but they went on chanting. they don't think, oh, well, I was cheated, it didn't work. No, it works. It works, and the result is worth it. So, okay, distinction of the soul from matter. And then the next question is, if I'm distinguished from matter, what happens? Right? If I leave the prison, what'll I eat? Right? Anybody out here ever see a prison menu? Oh God, that the food alone is enough to make you fear prison. It's the most, every single kind of commercial, mass food product you can imagine. So, well, if I leave prison, what'll I eat? If I leave this body, what'll I do? So then the Bhagavatam then describes, Krishna playing with the cows, playing with his friends. So many exalted, wonderful pastimes like that. And how to actually appreciate these. So in some ways, I can ask a question now. It's kind of a summary of our overview of what we're trying to do here. What is an educated person? Who wants to answer that? Somebody who has a master's degree in molecular biology, is he an educated person?
Sure.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah. But is there something higher? A better definition of an educated person? Yes, that would be nice. Any other what does Chanika Pandit say? What does Chanika Pandit? Chanika? Prabhupada said the most astute politician who ever lived. But he also said it was in Mayavadi. Even now in India, he's the most famous, you know, social philosopher. He said a person is educated when he looks at life in this way. He sees every woman other than his own wife as his own mother. You know? He sees everybody else's property as no more important to him than
garbage.
Yeah, things lying in the street. Maybe garbage, but things lying in the street. And he sees everybody else's pains as his own, like that. He said, that's an educated man. You know, not just technical education, like that. So that's a moral education. Then higher we get this philosophical education, you know, being able to, like Socrates. Socrates, the Stoics, they were great people. They were, Prabhupada said Socrates had to have been self-realized. Otherwise he could not have taken the poison, like that. He knew he wasn't the body. He had a good, strong impression like that. So this is a jnani. But then in terms of Prahlad Maharaj, you know what he says there? Because that Prahlad Maharaj, our Gurukula teacher. It's very nice. Yeah. Prabhupada talks about, he says, education means to reestablish our relationship with Krishna. Right? So fundamentally it means we're spirit. Right? And that gets us out of the material world. But after that, there's so much more, you know, to actually reestablish your relationship with Krishna. What is our relationship with Krishna? Yeah? What can it be? What kind of relationships do people have with Krishna in the spiritual world? It's an easy question. Huh? Servant? Yeah? What else? Huh? Be a friend? Mother? Father? Yeah, or girlfriend? Like that? Yeah. So this is our relationship with Krishna. So education means to reestablish that. Along with that, we've been working with the Gurukula in Lima. And it's gone through so many different phases, like this and that, and struggles, like every place, you know. It's very difficult, you know. So about 5 years ago, I got involved because my disciples got involved, and I discovered that most of them are teachers, you know. So we started working on the project, and you know, we worked 10 hours a day for 2 weeks to get everything straightened out in terms of people's own individual situation, the actual internal situation with the school, and the relationship with the government. And after the whole thing, we had a salary schedule set up. And it was incredible. Nanga Manjari is a school psychologist. And she's a professional psychologist. Her sister Rohini was a mathematics teacher at the university. Anandamaya and his wife Karuna are, you know, PE teachers in high school. Lakshman had been a Beverly Hills High School type teacher, one of the best places there. And it was incredible, the whole thing we had, you know. But in the beginning, the GBC position was that this is for the parents to take care of, don't bother us. But I started preaching a little bit about how important it is, that education, it brings your community together. It brings first-class families into your community. And everything else is going to prosper. And they were apologizing, saying, thank you, Maharaj, you're right, and we haven't got any money there, what can we do? So they gave us the whole area for free, the educational area, and they didn't rent it out like that. And so, what's his name? William Bella. He's one of the very, very famous sociologists from Berkeley. He said the educational system is like a stool. It goes on three legs. The community has to support it. The teachers have their hearts into it. And the families have to have their hearts into it. Any one of these is missing, doesn't work. So the teachers, the families, all the families, they were kind of thinking, well, this is just like a daycare center to keep our kids out of our hair so we can make money. And they're all like kind of like lower middle class families mostly. So Nanga Manjari just started having parents and teacher association meetings every 2 weeks and talking about the education. And the same thing happened. The whole community changed. And they started coming, like, you know, volunteering to do painting out of college. So they were volunteering to do painting and helping out and so much like that. And of course, the teachers were very dedicated. One boy, Raghubir, his parents were very poor, so he'd been in public school. And he couldn't learn. So as a very advanced educational, motivational technique, the teachers were twisting his ears to make him learn. And other kids, of course, were totally humiliating him. He came to our school when we got it going. He was a complete basket case. He was completely emotionally, shocked. So Nanga Manjari sat with him, gave him tests, and he was dyslexic. So then she did individual tutoring for him, and after some time he found out, I can learn, Then she put him into a regular class and then gave the teacher, special instructions about how to deal with a dyslexic child. And after about 1 year, he was just, he had a little bit of revenge consciousness. Not a lot, but a little bit revenge, But now he's dying. What's going to happen next? So that went on for about 1 year. But in the end, the parents wanted to put their children into public schools. And our teachers admitted, yes, we cannot compete with public schools in terms of chemistry and computer science. But yeah, ethical and moral development, even the parents admitted that kids had better education and character development in the school. And also they saw that they could learn better. They learned how to learn better. When they went into the public schools, they were in first place. They were popular. All their fears were destroyed. So then there's a psychological reaction. If you don't want something, then the parents who took their kids out tried to destroy the Gurukula. Like that. It's this natural psychological reaction, right? What's the word? Like sour grapes, So they asked me what to do with the Gurukula, because about 3 families wanted to go on with it. About out of 20 families, 17 opted out. So they said, okay, just make it into a homeschooling program. You've got enough, legal things and qualifications. You can keep it legal. Don't tell anybody. Just educate your own kids. And now it's mothers defending their own children. it's like, back off. Okay. So that, I know that would happen. So then, these other parents just stopped. Okay, stop harassing them. Okay, if you want your children to be, socially inept morons, do it, But then after 6 months, they saw that the kids coming out of there weren't socially inept, they weren't morons, but they weren't learning technical things so much. They were learning how to be Vaishnavas. But even still, the economy and everything else is very difficult to keep it going. So now what they've done is that a lot of the kids are all in public schools, but good public schools, where they have some relationship with the teacher, professors. The professor demanded that we come and do Vaishnava programs at least 3 times a year, like that. So it's a different kind of environment. Every place is different. So then what they started doing is on the weekends and weekdays having special cultural programs for the teenagers and younger children. And these all, qualified teachers organizing them. And so what they did, because every country is different. If you want machines, which country do you go to in Europe? If you want love, which country do you go to? France. that's lust. If you want good food, Italy, right? Every country has its character, the best police in the world. In the European heaven, the Germans are the mechanics, the Italians are the cooks, the French are the lovers, the Swiss are the judges, and the British are the, what do you call these guys, policemen. In the European hell, the British are the cooks. The Germans are the police. The Swiss are the lovers. You can see. If you ever had a Peugeot or something, or a Citroën, the French are the mechanics, and the Italians are the judges, if you know this system. So every educational ambient is different. Every ambience is different. But the goal, ultimately, is to go to Bhava Bhakti, to go through all these emotional things. If people are not ready for that, okay. These kids are demons. Okay, teach them how to become lawyers, right? And they become civilized demons when they grow up, like that. Okay, everybody can be helped. Prabhupada says that. Gurukula is for the attached and the detached both, right? Yeah. But if people are detached, okay, put them on the sannyas track, get them inspired to do austerities, to do introspection, and take them through Vaidhi Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti. And that's the perfection of Gurukula, of education, is that people realize their relationship to Krishna, like that. So many different, whole big topic like that. So they started this program, and then they started, because in Peru everybody is just born to be an artist, a dancer, It's not a big intellectual country. It's more like a very sweet country. There's intellectual people there, but it's always more like literature and that kind of thing. Science and stuff is more for like Chile, or, you know, psychiatry is for Argentina. Every country has its character there, you know. And so then they finally settled into, we have movie making. We have a fantastic movie we made from the book. We did that there. We'll try and we'll show that at SMU, like that. And so incredible. I've seen it 32 times. I wanted to see it again. They just caught the essence of this book and just, wow, it's incredible. Like that. You know, cost us, so far it's cost us $7,000 for a 35-minute movie, which is damn cheap, Baba. Damn cheap. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, the kids, they found one nice artist and she wanted to help teach the kids. So this is one of the paintings they did, the children. There you go. You can see it from there, I don't know. Yeah. So how old do you think is the artist? 7 years old. Yeah, yeah. But that's their karma. Yeah. Prabhupada said India, Indians will never catch up in the West in technology in 1,000 years because it's not their karma. You know. So in Peruvians, yeah, just kids, they just, you know, the girl, Sita, she's Anandamaya's daughter, and they watch like these Bombay movies. They're very popular there, you know. And I was watching her, actually I have a little bit of this. She's watching them on stage, and she's like about, then she's maybe about 5 years old. And she was just kind of imitating these movements, and she had the hip movements down, everything. It was like, you know, 5-year-old girl, she was doing this whole thing. It was like, you know. And in her last lifetime, she must have been like, you know, a Bombay movie star or something. You know? It was just like, you know, it was just like, it's just natural, you know. So then, you know, I'm trying to give my inspiration, because Sankirtan, to become educated in the Kali Yuga means to learn how to do Sankirtan, how to glorify Krishna, how to communicate to others. So that I was giving my, you know, trying to inspire them that way. So there's about 6 more paintings like this, 7 more. And then what we did, we all worked together, they made up this little book like that, this booklet. And it has the paintings. All 7 paintings, like that. And then I told them, you pick out some verse, you know, from the Bhagavatam or something like that. You know, for example, this shows all these ladies picking flowers. It's so beautiful. And it says, of hymns, I am, actually it's Spanish, of hymns, it's supposed to be I am. Oh, of hymns, in the Samaveda, I am the Brihat Samu. And of poetry, I am the Gayatri. Of months, I am November and December, and among seasons, I am flower-bearing spring. This beautiful thing. And the whole thing is a little story, imaginary story, about their little village where they live. Of course, it's actually the temple, which is out of the city. It's in a village. And so it says, collecting flowers for their lordships. 250 meters from the temple, we have sown fields of many vegetables. We sow there some potatoes, sweet potatoes, yucca, it's a root, carrots, corn, quinoa, it's a really nutritious grain if you know like that, very light, quinoa, and other things. To the left, we also sow some flowers, like carnations, roses, jasmines, pom-poms, chrysanthemums, orchids, marigolds, and lots of them. Here, all the Matajis are the responsible to collect the flowers, and then we make many garlands for the deities, beautiful deities, right? And we do that every day. For us, it is very gratifying to do this service for his lordships. On the weekends, we do competitions about who can make the best garland. This is very exciting for us, like that. So in the back, then there's also then a little picture of all the artists like that, in their biography like that, you know. So you can pass it on here and take somebody's, yeah. And pass it around. So then different people gave us donations for the Gurukula. So I gave them each one picture and a copy of the book, and everybody is so satisfied. You know, okay, this is education is worthwhile. And people are coming out as human beings, they're thinking about Krishna and something higher in life. So there's no attraction then for drugs and all these kind of horrible things, you know. And there it's going on like that. In Sharanagati in Canada, they're in their 3rd generation. Parents who started there and whose children grew up there are now parents. And the kids are like about maybe 3 years old. And so they're in the third generation there like that, you know, all growing up. And everybody's very happy. The kids, you know, the boys go off, you know, for their walkabout when they reach 18 years old, you know. Go see what life's about. They have different experiences. And they come back and marry the girl next door like that and live happily ever after. My God, you know. Amazing. So there's a lot of things happening in ISKCON, a lot of effort for many, many years and different programs developing. And these are some of the things I wanted to share that we're doing. And then I think also we have, you know, we want to hear also about the things that are happening, you know, in here. And this way, you know, some communication, you know, it's because different things work different places. Everybody has to develop your own programs in terms of education for children, for youth, for adults. Right, all these programs, and it's a real pioneering thing. It's a lot of work. It requires unlimited determination. That's all it requires. Nothing else. It's unlimited determination. You know, there's a famous story of Abraham Lincoln, right? Abraham Lincoln ran for city council and he failed. He ran for county councilor and he failed. He ran for state senator and he failed. He ran for president of the United States, and he won. You know. So the thing is, you're not a failure until you stop trying. So that's our whole point. Utsaha nishchayad, nishchayina. That's guaranteed success. Like that. So we're, you know, ourselves facing so many things. How do you get that? Get up early and get your rounds done. Yeah. Doesn't matter what else happens. Get up early and get your rounds done. Then after that, you've got that, you know, enthusiasm and intelligence just to go on all day. And my Chanika Pandit says, ignorance cannot stay where there is constant recitation of the Vedas, Bhagavatam. Poverty cannot stay where there is constant endeavor. And simple reactions cannot stay where there is constant chanting of the names of God. Like that. Yeah, keep on going. So any comments at this point or questions? Kind of finish here. You know? Yeah.
Koi prashna hai?
Hay preguntas? Ah, sí, por allá, señor. Commentaries?
Thank you very much for the so much inspiration and about the programs. It's really very nice to hear. Very nice.
Well, it's very nice being here in the community. It's a struggle, huh? Yeah, going on. Yeah. And also, I'm kind of very inspired being here. It seems like auspicious that Tamal Krishnamurti is a sannyas. Because that's it. This is education. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. It's all education. It's all education. So what's the purpose of Grihastha Ashram? To get ready for Vanaprastha Ashram. And okay, Kali Yuga, you can stay there. Become a purified devotee. But yes, sannyas is also very good, you know, for husband and wife. To get really, you know, ready. You know, to pass the final examination. And you can't cheat on that one. Yeah. So anyway, we're here for a few days, and I guess in the morning we'll be having some classes, and then tomorrow we have a nice Spanish language class, Spanish and English maybe, and it's SMU. We're going to have a wonderful program there. We'll probably show the movie there at that. And then Thursday we'll be back here again for then Lalita Madhava and Upa Goswami's background.
Thank you all very much. Stopa Padki. Warhamadandi Hare Devo.